Welcome back to the PhysioRx podcast. I'm Dr. Guillermo Contreras, physical therapist, CrossFit L1 trainer, and what am I? Subpar CrossFit athlete, here with my co-host Ryan Atkins. Just a quick disclaimer for you all. We are going to be talking a little bit about nutrition today. So, reminder, neither of us are nutritionists, certified nutritionists, certified dietetic nutritionists, whatever you want to call us. We are not that. We are simply talking from our experience, from what the current research states and says, and also from just what we have come to learn in our time as coaches, as healthcare professionals, and as athletes ourselves.
Yep. So take everything with, like Guillermo said, a grain of salt. And since we aren't paying you to listen to us, I don't think we can be held legally responsible for anything that we say. If you choose to follow or not follow, yeah. That's kind of on you. But hopefully we'll give you some good advice, maybe some tips and tricks for you to try to help improve the diet and then overall help improve health, wellness, and performance along the way.
So what we hope today to do is try and enter this conversation not from any one specific window or specific plan or direction. We know that there's a lot of different ways of eating out there. There's paleo, there's if it fits your macros. I personally use Renaissance Periodization. There's a little plug for them. So we hope to just kind of address this from an overall health and wellness standpoint. We're trying to find that middle ground, something that no matter what you follow, no matter what you do as far as diet goes, as far as the food you consume and what you use to fuel your body, that pretty much everyone can agree upon. And I think both of us come from a place where we agree that kind of the CrossFit view of nutrition, of eating meat, seeds, nuts, fruits, some vegetables, or no, that's backwards. Eat meats, vegetables, nuts, seeds, some fruits, little starches. No added sugars. I butchered that. Eat more vegetables, more plants. It's really important. We're going to address it from that basic viewpoint where we can all agree that eating those types of real foods are kind of the best ways to kind of fuel your body. As Ryan mentioned, I did use something called Renaissance Periodization about a year ago. I did a 12-week cut, and I actually lost about 35 pounds. So I went from about 210 pounds to 175. So actually, I was 205 down to 175. Significant amount of body fat off my body that I did not even know I was carrying around. I felt amazing. I enjoyed running for the first time in like 5-6 years again. Everything got a lot easier as far as gymnastics movements goes. My lifting went down, but in the last, 9 months of just doing maintenance with their templates, I've actually put on all the strength I lost at that point. I'm back to over, 400-pound deadlift, over 300-pound squat. My bench press is almost back to 300, which was always my best lift for some reason. And all my Olympic lifts are going up too. So, and I'm still sitting at like 182-183 body weight, doing another cut right now, but I'm emphasizing a lot more on keeping lean muscle tissue, whereas before I just wanted to lose fat. So there you go. There's a little segue, a little plug for them. If you want more info on them, check them out at RP Strength on Instagram or at RenaissancePeriodization.com.
Maybe a good starting point on this whole discussion would be kind of starting like with some generalities and then kind of narrowing down to specifics. So like in the intro, you mentioned a couple different types of diets. And in your mind, like, so we have like the paleo diet, we have, you know, CrossFit's like, I think they're still kind of promoting the zone diet in their level one certification. We have Renaissance Periodization. There's a whole slew of different dietary approaches out there. What if, let's start with the proposition, like someone's not ready to change like their whole diet around necessarily. They're not ready if they're taking like the whole measure and weighing approach. They're not ready for that necessarily. They're not ready to maybe change a whole bunch of food groups if they're like potentially going to adopt like maybe a paleo approach. What in your mind is like one of the, just give them one thing to kind of work on to ease their transition in there if they weren't ready for a whole bunch of things right off the bat. What in your mind is like one of the most important things?
So let's say I have a patient in front of me who is asking about dietary guidance or something like that. And again, I can only give some kind of advice or tips and tricks and stuff like that, but I can actually give them in-depth information. One of the biggest things we can do is take a look at what their diet currently looks like. So if you are not ready to make jump into Whole 30 or something like that, you're not ready to kind of make that approach, what we can do is let's take a look at your current diet. Are you eating enough fruits and vegetables? Are you eating lean meats? Is all your diet consist of kind of fast food, sodas, coffee? Like, is that what makes it up? How much water are you consuming? What are the little changes you can initially make right away that are going to have the biggest bang for your buck? You'll be surprised watching people just, if they drink 6-7 Cokes a day, try and get them to drop down to 4 Cokes a day, then to 3 Cokes a day, something like that, where just little by little, just making little changes where they start to see the improvement in themselves, and then that leads to bigger changes. Replacing Coke with water, replacing the bag of candy after lunch for that kind of quick sugar rush with something like nuts or seeds, or like an apple with some seeds, and just seeing if they notice the changes in themselves. And those small changes can kind of lead to bigger changes. So that's usually where I start someone off if they're not already. And I personally don't think I would have been ready to make that big jump into like a whole 30 change, but I know some people are.
Awesome. Awesome. I usually take the approach of well, where their protein intake level is at. I like the idea of just because good sources of protein do so many things for us, especially if we are already starting to if either start to incorporate the exercise habit or already have that habit down, and now we're looking at diet to improve our performance. If you, because generally speaking, if no one's really monitoring their diet, the chances of them getting adequate protein intake, at least in America, is pretty much slim to none. Yep. It's, you know, generally you're going to have like this high sugar, this outrageous carb count. So if we can bump that protein marker in the right direction, in my mind, that takes care of a lot of issues. It helps them recover better from the workouts. It helps to retain or potentially build muscle mass. It helps to burn fat a little bit. It's going to take up a portion of their diet. It's going to activate certain transmitters in the brain. I think it was leptin was one of them, mm-hmm. where it's going to make them full faster, and they're going to, again, be replacing some of that potentially excessive carbohydrate intake with hopefully something that'll be better to spur the physical changes and performance benefits that they're looking for.
And Ryan points out a good thing right there is you have to remember that everyone that walks in through your door, whether you want to cross a gym or just a regular gym or you're just a therapist, not just a therapist, but when someone walks in, they're going to be in a different place. Are they already at a place where they're eating well and they're trying to figure out how do I improve my performance? How do I improve my body composition like that? Maybe that's where you take a look at their protein intake and they have an idea of how much they intake a day. Or do you have someone fresh, never exercised, never measured their food, kind of just eat until they were full kind of lifestyle? And those are the ones you kind of like, okay, what are small changes we can make right away to kind of help improve where you want to be or get you to where you want to be? So just kind of keep that in mind when you're looking at athletes or looking at someone you're working with, trying to give them some sort of nutrition outlook or an idea of where to head or where to start out.
I really like the how you took the, like the baby step approach and just, you know, get them moving in the right direction type thing, where if like my lunch is 2 pizzas and 2 liters of soda, let's get that down to maybe 1 pizza and maybe one of those liters being a liter of water or mm-hmm. something like that. So super stoked about agreeing on that idea. One of the things that we brought up in kind of brainstorming ideas for this podcast was that certain dietary approaches, it becomes kind of like, well, like the political landscape of America, where you have people who lean left or lean right, and then via Facebook algorithms or misinterpretations, either have their views or maybe they are crazy and just have these outrageously political views on opposite sides of the spectrum where you can't have a conversation and come to some sort of constructive conversation that with a meaningful exchange of ideas. I think to a certain extent that exists on a dietary landscape as well. One of the ways that you can kind of interpret that is, or use that analogy, is that if you look at things like if it fits your macros or, you know, the zone diet, and you just start looking at through the lens of just calorie counting or just those percentages and lose complete sight of food quality, you're probably not going to be doing yourself the best favor that you can do. On the other side of the fence, if you're kind of taking more of a paleo-ish approach, but you're just focusing just on food quality, but you're sitting at your desk, and I think, you know, you're going through like a, I think the analogy that was used in another podcast was like every day you're going through like a 5-pound bag of almonds. I think everybody agrees that, you know, those are two very extreme approaches that in the long run aren't going to give you the best results. So finding like the best benefits of those, where do you think is like, we talked about kind of baby steps. How would you find like, do you take kind of one step at a time, like, all right, let's monitor calories. And then once you have the calories monitored, it's like, okay, well, we're within a certain caloric range here. Now we'll take a look at food quality. Kind of bounce back and forth between those two approaches maybe to find that happy medium, or?
I think you have to look at the individual you're talking to, because you're going to see somebody, and if you talk to them about using MyFitnessPal or something like that to monitor calories, and they're all about it, then it's going to be easier to kind of, okay, let's do some calorie tracking. Let's kind of track your food, things like that. If you're looking at someone who has absolutely zero interest in tracking their food, could care less about downloading an app, or is just not going to be accountable to themselves to do that kind of thing, it's okay, let's look at food quality, right? So It always depends on kind of who you have in front of you, who you're working with, and who you are as an athlete. Are you someone who is willing to buy a food scale, measure their food, track everything they eat, or at least 90% of what they eat? Or are you someone who has no interest in doing that? Then what you can do is, especially if you're someone a little newer, it's like, okay, let's just look at what your meals are composed of. Is it primarily like rice, pastas, breads, things like that? How many vegetables are you taking in? Can we increase that? Can you look down at your plate and see that maybe half your plate is greens and vegetables and something like that, and then a quarter is those grains, rice, potatoes, whatever you got, and then you got that nice piece of meat or whatever protein you have on there? Can you start to basically transition yourself to, instead of consuming more of those refined carbs or processed carbs or just carbs as a whole, can you start eating more vegetables? And again, this is not me demonizing carbs. I'm the last person to say no to a donut or a bagel, anything like that. Like, I like carbs, don't get me wrong. But a big thing that you just notice, like Ryan mentioned, is just like most people don't get enough protein in their diet, a lot of people are really missing out on vegetables, especially the leafy greens or like the dark greens or any type of vegetables like that, that kind of can really help improve their diet. So usually that's kind of the approach I would take or I would recommend for someone, especially no matter where you're at. Let's take a look at what you are eating, how much you are eating of what you're eating. And even if you can't measure it, just having like a food journal. I don't know if you've seen that before, but someone just write down what you eat. Don't worry about the calories. Don't worry about this, but just write it down.
And that brings that awareness. Studies have shown just like once you start doing that process of just writing the stuff down, even if maybe, you know, exact amounts aren't there necessarily, it'd be nice to work towards that. But it just makes you a little bit more self-conscious, where that in alone can be the psychological spark for some people to make a little bit of a change.
I think it was a podcast I heard of John as well, but he talks about the last thing you want to do at the end of the night when you're like a little bit hungry is write down that you had an entire bag of Skittles like just before bedtime or something like that. It's like, oh, I had an entire bag of Skittles. And you're like, oh, look at that. 3 times this week, I ate a bag of Skittles. And it's like, oh, that's probably not helping me, right? So when you write, like Ryan said,
Skittles isn't a fruit? Okay. Well, the lime.
Not the new ones. The old ones, they were lemon lime probably.
Okay.
Yeah. But that's just kind of a nice way to approach it, I think, to kind of have just bring that awareness, right? So if you're someone who just never pays attention to what they eat, and now you're like in a way forced to kind of track what you're eating, how much you're eating, things like that, it helps you just be a little more aware of what you are putting into your body. And as we mentioned, the more leafy greens, vegetables, fruits, we all know that a lot of fruits and vegetables have those good antioxidant properties, those good anti-inflammatory properties, especially berries. If you look at strawberries, raspberries, blueberries, they have a lot of anti-inflammatory properties. So eating things like that, if you're someone who has a lot of joint pain or back pain or just you're really sore all the time, eating a little more of that kind of fruit that's got those properties will help at times just kind of help you with recovery, with just feeling better. If you're someone who deals with pain or is coming back from an injury, using fruits and vegetables like nature's medicine to kind of help you with improving some of those pain things as well.
So a lot of what you mentioned so far has been kind of along the lines of like eating our leafy greens, our berries and stuff like that. What are your thoughts, the counter argument potentially to that kind of, and from a health and wellness point, you know, that totally makes sense. Let's reduce the inflammation. What, especially with the background in Renaissance periodization, because I think I know some of the guys who helped create that, not personally, but just I know some of their standpoints where the argument, to the other side of the fence, where if it's more performance related, are you allowing yourself or would you allow a client who, I'm not going to say is less concerned with health and wellness, but they feel they need or they want that kind of starchy carb intake, like right around that workout time where they have some high intensity work going on. How would you modify things to go towards that end? I guess where do we find like a good balance between, all right, we need to uptake the intake of the carbs to supplement the workout, but at the same time, we still want to keep inflammation to a minimum.
Absolutely, yeah, and I think they have a couple, they have a lot of really good books, Renaissance Periodization does, but they do mention about, it's like nutrient timing, which is something a little more in-depth than probably we would probably be able to get into here, but I think it's okay to kind of increase those carbohydrates in that way, right? I'm not saying get all your carbs from fruits and vegetables and things like that, but I think you have to know your body a little bit too. Because if you're someone who doesn't respond well to those starchy carbs, like eating breads and pastas and oats and things like that, just either gives you gut rot or you do have a true, like you actually have a gluten intolerance, then you got to find other sources for those carbohydrates, right? So that's where you want to intake a little bit more to kind of refuel your body. We do know that carbohydrates in general, a lot of the times, will help with decreasing the catabolic effect of exercise to kind of allow for increased protein synthesis, or not that, but like just decreased muscle breakdowns and like that.
So Guillermo's, not to go too far off the rails here, as I tend to do during these podcasts, or so I've been told. but he's talked about his personal experience. My best experience happened about 2 years ago. And, you know, people knock, within the CrossFit communities, people sometimes knock the zone diet. And I get it. Sometimes if you go too strictly by the zone diet or get too caught up in the macros, you lose sight of food quality. But, this is the part where I remind you we are not nutritional experts, but about 2 years ago, I was on a functional hypertrophy program. Kudos to John Russell for putting that one out. Awesome program. And in their dietary recommendations, they did have kind of like a macro approach. And I think it was not off by more than 5 or 10% on each of the macronutrients as far as protein intake, fat intake, and carbohydrate intake relative to the zone diet. And I was hitting it hard. I mean, I was putting a good effort to work out. It was a great program design. And, here's the caveat where I tell you might not want to follow this advice. I might have been getting better results if I kind of followed more along the lines of what Guillermo was talking about. But I had saved my carbohydrate intake largely to have my pre-workout slushy was my saving grace as far as me limiting my calories and limiting my carb intake, knowing that before I worked out, I could have that that slushy before my workout, and that would take up the majority of my carbohydrate intake for the day. And again, probably not the best approach for health and longevity, but it definitely was a psychological relief giving myself that little reward. And then, you know, maybe, who knows, maybe there was some sort of a placebo effect, but just knowing that I had those extra carbs, I think was a good boost as far as performance during the workout itself too.
No, big time. And I think, like you mentioned right there, like that the psychological aspect of food, right? I think it's really important, no matter what dietary route or avenue you take, I think it's really important to understand why you're training or why you're exercising, things like that. Are you training to go to the games? Are you training to get better at your athletic sport or whatever sport you choose to do? Are you training just to be really good at your CrossFit box and just be like one of the top athletes there? Are you training just to look better naked? Like, you have to know your why. Like, why are you doing what you're doing? And with that, then when you look at food, then the food can't be something that you either reward yourself. In general, food should never be something you reward yourself for exercising for, and it should never be something you punish yourself by like taking away when you don't exercise. We need to have a healthy relationship with food. That could be a whole other conversation, but food should not be something you punish yourself with or reward yourself with. Food should be something you fuel your body with, you enjoy.
Is this the part where we also state that we're not psychologists?
Correct, yeah, we're not psychologists either. I just read a lot and follow a lot of things on Instagram. But it's really important to understand, like, okay, what is my why? Do I want to be really good at sports? Do I want to build a really strong, lean, muscular physique? If so, I need to kind of learn. I need to take some time to kind of go and research what is nutrient timing? When should I be intaking more protein? When should I be intaking more carbs? When should I be increasing my fats if my performance are going down? There's a lot of really good research out there that you can find and learn more about how to do those things. And otherwise, you can also get a coach. You can hire someone that is legally able to advise you on these things and give you the exact guidance you're looking for what you're doing. If you just want to look better naked, that's when you're like, okay, now I need to understand how much I'm putting in, calorie out, or food quality, whatever it is. But finding those numbers you need in order to drop body fat or increase lean muscle tissue, whatever it is you're hoping to achieve, that's when you take those routes, and that's kind of when you follow those guidelines. But if you just want to be healthy, then I think, like I mentioned earlier, the biggest thing you can do is just try and keep a healthy, balanced diet. Limit those quote-unquote cheat meals, or those like really like delicious, greasy, sugary foods like donuts and pizza and burgers and fries. Like, donuts. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with eating those, right? As long as you're not eating those 5 days a week, 6 days a week for three meals a day, like that's kind of where you run into some issues. Not only with your performance, but your recovery suffers a little bit if you're eating a lot of fatty foods. Your poops aren't as comfortable eating a lot of fatty foods, and everyone likes a good poop. So there we go. There's my poop mention for nutrition.
Wow, where do we go from there? So some of the examples that Guillermo gave talked about, like, over intake or eating the wrong things, or kind of like the typical stuff that you see is, you know, especially in our culture as far as terms of excess. Maybe another thing that we could talk about potentially is how often do you see or come across people not eating enough and not fueling their workouts, and they get caught up in the mindset that like, oh, I got to lose weight, so I'm going to cut my caloric intake down to 800 or 1,000 calories a day, and I'm going to do 2 CrossFit workouts in a day, and I'm going to expect to get progress that way. Do you see that at all? Or
luckily, I have not. I see that more in kind of the younger female athlete, I would say, who doesn't have kind of either parents who kind of are aware of kind of nutrition or things like that, and you kind of see they're in like their developmental ages, so like 11 to 14 years old, things like that. I've known a couple younger female athletes who run into issues with like stress fractures and injuries like that because just their intake and food consumption and the amount that they are doing for their sport is kind of more than they should be doing, or not should be doing, but with what they're fueling, it's just kind of insufficient. Luckily here at our gym and with my experience, I have not seen a lot of underconsumption in those athletes. Every now and again, I get see a male athlete who probably could be eating a little bit more for what they're doing. And then they kind of struggle either with just like aches, pains, injuries, or they're trying to like increase certain weights or lifts or things like that, and they're just underconsuming, and they don't realize that, hey, with the amount of activity you're doing, you should probably be intaking close to 3,000, 4,000 calories a day. But I actually haven't seen that too often. An old joke, but you've been around the block a lot longer than I have. How about you? Have you seen any athletes in that way?
I think sometimes I see it with like more of the heavier individuals where they're just so stuck on the caloric intake that sometimes they fail to consider that by fueling your workout better, by getting the adequate amount of caloric intake that you need, you're going to be able to put more intensity into that workout and get better results from the workout itself. In addition to that, not only having that high intensity level, but having the necessary, hopefully if the calories are of the right quality and content, but having the materials needed to help the recovery process along as well.
Yeah, and that's, I think that's a really big, because I've seen a handful, not a handful, like 2 or 3, of heavier athlete individuals who are very much so, like the scale rules their life, right? Like look at the scale, like I'm not losing weight. And they are restricting themselves to 800 calories a day, 900 calories a day. And they wonder like why they're tired or why they're always achy and all these things. And again, that's a whole other issue where it's like, hey, like we need to like get a healthy relationship with food in order for you to kind of understand like it's okay to eat and that you should be eating to fuel your body versus restricting yourself to, I don't know, hurt your body or anything.
There's a couple of issues that are sometimes tough to tackle. And one is like that it's okay to eat, and the other one is that it's okay to step on the scale once a week, or maybe even less, depending on that ties into where they're at again. And then, you know, sometimes I'll get a little bit scared because I'll be helping a client out, maybe not necessarily doing nutritional counseling if they don't, you know, I don't want to go someplace unless they're ready to go there too. Or in some cases, some of the clients I work with, they're outsourcing that to another person, which is obviously I'm completely fine with that. I'm not going to pretend I'm some shining example of nutrition at the current time. But sometimes they'll say, oh, I only lost a pound or something like that. I've been putting all this effort into my diet, my pound. And then the next question, the follow-up question I have on that is like, yeah, but how are your clothes fitting? And they're like, oh, well, my pants are a lot looser. And I'm like, okay, well, cool. Then I know that what they're doing is okay, and that they're probably losing fat and maybe building a little bit of muscle along the way, and that's fine. I think there was a really awesome picture posted maybe a month ago on Instagram or Facebook where it was a female athlete, and I forget the time frame involved, but she had only lost a pound. But the before and after picture, it was like that had to have been like at least 3 or 4 sizes that she had dropped.
Yeah.
It was pretty amazing. It was an amazing transformation. But on this, you know, if you just go by scale weight, you would have never have guessed.
We talked about kind of where things can meet up, whether no matter what avenue you're taking for your nutrition, your food intake, everything like that, the importance of nutrition for recovery, and how eating the right amounts of food and everything like that. We talked about recovery 2 episodes ago. It was the first episode we did, but how important food is for recovery, whether, like Ryan mentioned, you're intaking enough protein, intaking enough carbohydrates, drinking enough water, all those things are going to play a big part in how you recover, how well your body adapts to stresses, and just kind of being able to do those things. So if you're eating a lot of like giant meals that leave you feeling really full and stuff like that, sometimes it makes it a little bit more uncomfortable or gives us a little bit less motivation. Whereas if you're eating good, solid meals that make you feel full, that make you feel comfortable, that give you good energy, your workouts are then affected in a positive way. You can work out a little bit harder, and then again, you're seeing positive progress there.
What are your thoughts on, I think part of the issue when it comes to nutrition is that American society has these kind of cultural norms of what they expect a person to look like based on, mm-hmm. you know, the can I swear? Because I'll just call it the BS, like fashion magazines, Hollywood, et cetera, where they have potentially unrealistic kind of, they set up people to have these unrealistic expectations for people to achieve. And so I guess the point I'm getting at is that certain people, based on genetics, even if they do make some pretty significant transformations, mm-hmm. they might just end up having that husky body type. Yeah. And I'm not excusing the fact like, okay, you're 200 pounds overweight. That's just your genetics at play necessarily. But I'm saying like you're going to have I don't know. I guess the best example I can think of is I was watching what's that game called? The Titan Games? Yeah. The one that the Rock is hosting?
Yep, yep.
Right. And so there's this power lifter on there. And obviously just a very husky woman. But their physical athletic performance was like outstanding. I mean, I've never seen anyone, male or female, grab that boulder and drag it as fast. Yeah, she did it one hand, like casual walk in the park. But you look at the size and the legs and hips of her. And obviously, she's a power lifter, so mm-hmm. she's been training those muscles, and there's a certain amount of hypertrophy involved. But I think that even if she wasn't athletically involved, I mean, she's not the body type that's going to be your size six with whatever measurements are desirable now based on, I don't know, Playboy Centerfold or Hollywood or whatever the case might be.
I don't think Playboy.
What are some tactics in your mind, or how can we take someone who's obsessed with their physical appearance and somehow channel that psychological energy? I mean, sometimes you'll see it in the CrossFit gyms or in other gyms where they do get tired, or they have that shift where they're no longer concerned about fitting into a super low size outfit, but they notice their performance and they start tracking like lifting numbers and they get excited about that. And for some people, I think it's just a natural outgrowth of consistent training. But I don't know, what are some other ways that you can think of maybe to kind of, you know, let's not focus so much on like how you look per se. You're getting healthier, and that's the important part.
I think you kind of nailed it there at the end. I mean, again, this is just kind of my I guess personal opinion, and kind of what I've seen is taking people's accomplishments and making that, giving that, like putting that on a bigger pedestal, I guess, than their former views of what beauty is, or what kind of they see as how they should look, or how they should feel and how they should be seen and things like that. So like you mentioned, like they start tracking their lifts, they start tracking these other things, and they're seeing like, you know what, like quote unquote, I'm not ideally where I want to be, but like my squat's going up and I feel stronger, and I'm not where I want to be here and this and that, and I'm not where I want to be here, but I just PR'd my friend and all these things. And a little bit by bit, that starter, that caveat in the beginning where I'm not want to be, that starts going away, and it's just they're happy with the accomplishments, they're happy with what their body is able to do. They're seeing like, I am awesome because of everything I can do with this body I have, that like, holy cow, I'm strong, I'm powerful, I have great endurance, I have a lot of mental capacity to like push myself awesome. Really hard, right?
Love it.
And not only that, but I don't know if you follow a lot of the CrossFit social media people, but recently Amanda Barnhart, she was in the games last year, she killed it in the games, she was a rookie last year, but there was a post from a Barre studio in like Australia that talked about the CrossFit body, or like the weightlifting body, versus like the Barre body, and they talked about how Barre will not give you the body of like this woman, basically, and in a way basically calling her out, saying like, this is not like attractive and things like that. And it's like it was just a super big step back for like how me personally, I think it's awesome like to be like strong and powerful, and like she's an attractive athlete. Like I think when my wife and I first started dating, she didn't want to quote unquote like get bulky. Like she told me like, I'll work out with you, but I don't want to get bulky. And I started getting her lifting heavy. She started lifting heavy. I have her eating more protein now, which is really cool too, because she was like not a fan, but like she enjoys more proteins now. And she put on muscle mass in her traps. She put on muscle mass in her deltoids, in her arms. Her legs are muscular. Like everything kind of like got a little more muscular, and she quote unquote bulked up a little bit. She's not enormous, she's not huge, but she has some good muscular definition, good muscular size, and she now loves it. Like, she's proud of her shoulders. She's proud of her biceps. She's proud of her triceps, even though sometimes I joke and say I can't see them. Like, there's a pride, and there's, like, this an empowerment kind of thing, where it's, like, she's strong, she's powerful, and she knows she's beautiful, and, she is, right? And I think a big thing is, like, we just that shift of mindset of, like, don't worry so much about, like, how it looks, but, like, understand, like, how awesome it is and how awesome you are and
how much,
like,
better you're feeling.
Correct. Yeah.
So, like, you're trying cool to shift this whole those. Bait and switch tactic that I've been using.
Yeah. Totally. Right. And, like, you would hope that people would respond to that a little bit. And, like, if they don't, obviously, like, as a coach or a clinician, you can only do so much. And at some point you have to, if you start to feel it's a true issue, if it is a true body dysmorphic issue or anything like that, it's finding them the right support, the right help, whether it be psychiatrist, psychologist, social worker, whatever you can help them with, nutritionist that can help them kind of get those things zeroed in. That's kind of where we have to go, because you have to remember, like, you wear a certain hat. Like, when I'm downstairs coaching, I have my coach's hat on. When I'm up in my clinic, I have my PT hat on. When I'm doing some other stuff, I kind of have both hats on slightly sideways, because I'm using my PT knowledge and kind of background to help people with coaching and stuff like that as well.
I'm about to make a Mr. Robot reference in Elliot Alderson, but I won't go there, because it might be lost on over half of our listeners.
Including the co-host.
Fair enough.
So, like, I think I mentioned in the beginning, and I'm going to try not to butcher it again. So I think as far as nutrition goes, I think one of the biggest things we want to remember is when you're looking at what the best tactic is, I don't think there is one best tactic. I think you want to make sure that you are eating meats and vegetables, nuts, seeds, some fruits, little starch, no processed sugar, right? Obviously, the no processed sugar is impossible for some people. I know myself, like, I enjoy those things. But just limit those things. You want to be eating more vegetables. And if you're not sure where to start, start with one step. And that doesn't mean give up everything. It means, hey, let's limit one thing. It's like, I don't want to say it's like smoking. Smoking is probably a lot harder to quit. But, like, giving up, like, smoking a little less, eating something that can replace that thingy, that kind of desire to eat a lot of dessert at night. You have some Greek yogurt with berries, and that's like eating that bowl of ice cream at night. Instead of eating a bag of chips, you munch on some cashews or some almonds. You'll probably get fuller faster with eating those nuts, whereas a bag of chips, I could sit in the entire family-sized bag of Doritos and, like, still feel like I want something else. But you give me, like, 3 or 4 handfuls of almonds, and I'm, like, done eating them after those 3 or 4 handfuls, right? So, in a way, you start decreasing caloric intake without even realizing it, and you start losing weight if that's kind of your goal, or you start increasing the fats that you're eating throughout the day, healthy fats, and all of a sudden you have more energy that you didn't think you had before. You start increasing, put avocado in your breakfast or whatever it is, but just doing these little additional things where all of a sudden you feel fuller for longer, you have more energy, and those small changes will kind of give you those gradual progressions towards bigger changes, and that's kind of where I think would be great.
And if that doesn't work for you, you know, take into consideration the fact all the time, energy, and resources that these companies that are selling you these bags of potatoes chips have done to manipulate your taste buds to keep eating and eating more. And so at the very least, you can in a sense stick it to the man by refusing to be manipulated and going through the whole bag of chips while you're watching a TV show.
If you're listening to this all the way to the end, thank you. And two, feel free to if you're on social media, on shoot us a question. We would like to start doing some question and answer thing at the end of these episodes, so it'd be fun to have some questions from, I guess, the audience, and not just us answering our own questions. So if you have any questions, please either shoot us an email at physiorx@gmail.com or at physiorx on Instagram. I think we're also on Twitter at physiorx. So just shoot us any questions you have there. We'd love to answer them in the next episode or a future episode.
Any other topics for a future podcast? Anything you want to, you know, hear more information about? We'd love to at least entertain ideas. We might be avoiding the conspiracy and UFO theories at least for a little bit.
Exactly. And lastly, if you want more information on nutrition, again, remember Ryan and I are CrossFit L1s, but we are not certified nutritionists. So everything we're saying on here is just kind of our experience, kind of things we've put together from books we've read, articles we've read, blogs we've read, just kind of things we've found that work for us and have worked for clients and athletes that we've worked with independently as well. So if you want more information, my recommendation is Renaissance Periodization, RP Strength on Instagram, on Twitter, everything like that, renaissanceperiodization.com, or I think rpstrength.com. You can find books, templates for fat loss, physique, muscle gain, even healthy diet templates. So that's my recommendation. Again, I don't get paid anything from them. I just love what they did for me, and I want to support them as a company because of how much they've helped me change my life. So, Ryan, I don't know if you know any sources out there for people as well.
No, well, there's a lot of different sources, and I think for me, Renaissance periodization worked for you. I had kind of a macronutrient ratio and caloric intake kind of count work for me at one time. That being said, when I was on the Zone diet for a while, and that, you know, that worked really well for me too. So it's kind of hard to make a blanket recommendation, but with nutrition, I think enough is not known to where do a little bit of self-experimentation for you. See if like taking an approach with food quality works for you. I think Rob Wolf used to always talk about the 30-day thing. Try something for 30 days. If it's only 30 days, if you feel better, perform better, and look better, you know, then you might be onto something. And if it's, you know, if you're not changing five variables at once, then you know, oh, is that one thing that I made a switch 4 weeks ago that seems to be working with me? I'm going to keep that change. Let's try something else for the next 30 days and kind of go from there.
Boom. So just start somewhere. If nutrition is something you're curious about, you're not sure what works for you, start somewhere. Small changes can lead to big changes. Big changes can lead to life changes. So give that a shot. Again, thank you guys for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks, folks.